Hello and welcome to the This Week in Iowa podcast. I'm Sabrina Ahmed. This Week in Iowa focuses on the political scene of the Hawkeye State and beyond. From the State House to the White House, we've got you covered. You can find the This Week in Iowa podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so be sure to subscribe now. You can also watch This Week in Iowa every Sunday at 9 a.m. on Local 5. Want more local political coverage? Follow This Week in Iowa on Twitter or visit weareiowa.com. Iowa is the only state that doesn't automatically restore voting rights for nonviolent felons who've served their time. They have to go through an application process with the governor's office. Well, 347 Iowans are currently waiting to hear back from the governor's office to see if they can participate in the Iowa caucuses next month. The governor told reporters this week that her office is processing the applications from those convicted felons as fast as it can.
I can make the assurance that they will be, of those 347, they will be completed prior to the February caucuses. Worked with Director Baines as well as Director Skinner, and so they've made the commitment to get those done. If individuals are interested in participating in the February caucuses, they need to get that application in as soon as possible.
Now, this is an issue the governor has tried to push for. An amendment to the Iowa Constitution last session was brought up. It failed, but it will likely come up again this session. In the meantime, how do you apply to have your voting rights restored if you're a felon? You fill out an application on the governor's website with the appropriate information. Then you mail it back into the governor's office, or you can deliver it straight to the Capitol. Well, from the session to the caucuses, they're just 22 days away. A recent poll has three Democrats tied for first in the state. Former Vice President Joe Biden, former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and Senator Bernie Sanders are tied at 23% in a CBS News and Gov poll published Sunday, about a week ago now. But some experts say coming out of the caucuses on top isn't necessarily the most important thing.
This is the Jimmy Carter way, right? Jimmy Carter, who really put Iowa on the map. Jimmy Carter didn't win the Iowa caucuses. He was behind uncommitted, but he did so much better than anyone expected him to do that it really changed the media narrative.
Professor Rachel Payne Caulfield says a lot of times candidates get a bigger benefit from mixing things up. It's not a surprise if Joe Biden does well because he's the perceived frontrunner when he was announced. The big surprise would be Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who had very little name recognition until he built his ground game and grassroots campaign in Iowa. President Obama, of course, won the Iowa caucuses. He was another big surprise. The United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement is closer to final approval. An email from Senator Chuck Grassley's office says it was voted out of Senate Committee 25-3, a bipartisan vote. In the statement, Grassley said, quote, "This modernized trilateral trade agreement will open new markets for American exports, create hundreds of thousands of new jobs, grow the national economy, and protect U.S. workers." Grassley went on to say he expects the full Senate will act soon and that final approval of the USMCA is just around the corner. The House voted to pass the agreement last month. Coming up next, the Speaker Select of the Iowa House takes the gavel for the first time tomorrow. How things will change as new leadership takes over. Leadership in the Iowa House. So what does that mean for issues that failed in the House last session? I sat down with Speaker-elect Pat Grassley, and we started with the issue of some birth control being given by pharmacists, not doctors.
From my perspective, if the caucus can reach an agreement with it, you know, working through the committee process, if they can reach an agreement, I'm not going to stand in the way, obviously, of that coming, but I know there's a lot of work going into it, and I know that it isn't something that's just the House working on isolated. I know we're continuing to have conversations with the governor's office. But again, if that were something where we can reach consensus within our caucus, I would not.
What are the concerns that you're hearing from
I think what you see on this issue is just it kind of falls into an overall larger issue. You know, we have. Always have topics coming up, you know, protecting life, and then it just kind of falls into categories in which that's right or wrong. I'm not necessarily making a judgment on, but my observation would be I think it falls into sometimes it gets tied into other categories of legislation that it may or may not actually have to do with. So I think it's something that you're going to see from the House's perspective. We're going to continue to be open to, and I think as a caucus we should continue to have a constructive dialogue with one another and see if we can reach some consensus, and then obviously something that the governor would support as well.
But also another issue in the life discussion was this potential for a constitutional amendment to say that abortion is not a guaranteed right. Do you think that will be a renewed effort?
I think that we will, as a caucus, have a conversation about that very early on in session. I think to that specific issue that you're touching on, several members of the caucus have brought that up, and not just several. I mean, our caucus has displayed clearly, and the legislature, the House, and the Senate, and the governor displayed we're very pro-life. And so I think you're going to definitely see that conversation happen within our caucus internally to find out, you know, this it's a big decision we'll have to make. So it isn't like some, you just walk in front of the caucus, say, here it is, and we walk out and we have an agreement. You know, we have to really start working through this process and what that would look like as we move forward. And that's something I think we're going to do early in session to see where a potential landing point may be on that.
And now as far as rules of the road, I'll call them, traffic cameras and handheld devices.
Yeah.
There's potential that bans on both of these technologies could come up this legislative session. How do you feel about traffic cameras, first of all?
For me personally, I have been here long enough that I think I've probably voted every way on traffic cameras because we've taken a lot of votes in my time here. But I voted for regulate, I voted to ban, and I continue to have that position. I've been very clear that if we come up with a bill that does either one, I will be supportive of that. We obviously have a different transportation chair going into this next session. So we have a different transportation chair, and then you have issues like you said with hands-free. So I think you're going to see those conversations happening at the committee level. But again, as far as the makeup of the legislature from last year, the members are all virtually the same. So I, you know, what the dynamic looks like in the committees, I don't know how much there really will be a change from last year.
Okay, so does that mean that...
Well, I think that we've seen, you know, obviously getting a ban done has been very difficult, and so other paths have been gone down trying to decide the way the money is spent, different regulations and things like that. I think that there's, it's just a, again, it's not a partisan, it's not necessarily a pure partisan issue going into it. It's a lot of where you come from as well, you know, and what part of the state you're from.
Time has also passed where people can have more conversations and perhaps be persuaded one way or another. Same issue, is there same way goes for work requirements for Medicaid?
Yeah, and I know that those conversations, that's another one, I know that those are happening today. We are looking at some things, for example, like I touched on child care earlier. You have the cliff effect is what it's called in child care, where you lose your benefit. It isn't like you're just weaned off of benefits. It's you get to a certain point and you lose all of them. That's some reforms that I think we can look at that I think we'll actually have probably bipartisan support. Now, how we get there, I don't know what they look like. And it's the same way with work requirements. Is that going to be a part of the conversation? Well, I think whatever we do, we have to make sure it doesn't cost the state money to actually implement work requirements. If there's something reasonable that we can do, I know the House is very open to being a part of that conversation. But I think, you know, it was being proposed last year. Now it's been talked about. But I think as far as real traction, it, you know, a lot of things around here that are somewhat significant pieces of legislation don't just happen overnight. And so while those conversations have continued, I know there's some other pieces that we've been working on that I actually think have some good momentum going into session two.
Sorry, final question for you, because you've mentioned workforce a couple times. Obviously, Future Ready Iowa passed last year. What do you think still needs to be done on
well,
the workforce
I think,
front?
So I think what we need to continue to do, I don't know what, and here's so we obviously have Future Ready Iowa, and so we're going to continue to invest the resources that it takes to be supportive of that program. From what I've heard, it's been wildly successful at the community colleges from the students and the community college's perspective. I think one of the next phases we need to do, now this one's a difficult one, is what do we have to do to attract and retain people to the state. Other states are doing things. All those usually involve resources, so we need to be willing to look at what those are. But I think that's kind of one of the next phases. Continue to support skill training, but what can we do to retain and attract new people to the state? That's kind of the next phase of it.
And a big thank you to Pat Grassley for sitting down with us. Coming up next, we continue our discussion with the majority at the State House, but we hear from Senator Jack Whitaker on what didn't make it out of the Senate. Well, Welcome back. Senator Jack Whitaker is majority leader. He decides what bills will be debated. There are some issues where the House and Senate don't align, even though the same party is in the majority. We talked to him about where the two chambers differ, starting with where he stands on giving felons right to vote. This is a priority, of course, from the governor that didn't make it out of the Senate, though it did pass the House last session.
Well, the biggest concern in the Senate is when you just restore voting rights for all felons. That's all felons, all crimes. And we believe that we need to start defining which of those felonies that were committed you can receive your rights back. And maybe there's some felonies that were committed that you don't. So if you kill somebody or rape someone, we think that might be too far to get your voting rights back. And so that's been a lot of the conversation in the Senate, is defining what those crimes are that you may not get them back. And I've said this many times, if you kill someone, that person never gets to vote again, and maybe you shouldn't either. And so those are the conversations that we've been having in the Senate.
Speaking of, what would you say are the number one issues that you want to see pass the Senate this year that maybe didn't make it last year?
Well, some of the issues that did pass the House, one was an animal neglect bill that at the end of session, we had three different bills on my desk. We had two from the Senate and a different one from the House that we were trying to reconcile and try to find agreement on. We didn't find that at the end of last year, but I had told our entire caucus that I would expect a bill to pass in the 2020 session related to that animal neglect or animal torture. And so we've been working hard on that issue throughout the off session, and hopefully we can find some agreement there.
Do you foresee that, I mean, how many different pieces of legislation have we seen on traffic camera bans?
A lot.
Do you foresee that being an issue that's brought up again? If so, how do you feel about it being from an area where we have traffic cameras aplenty?
Yeah, I voted several times to ban the traffic cameras, and there were, as long as Brad Zahn's in the legislature, we'll continue to have those bills. I'm confident of it because that's been a passion of his. But it seems like the last 3 or 4 years we've had those bills but have not been able to find agreement between the Senate and the House on whether we should do a full ban or whether we should regulate them and really dictate where those cameras can be. Different areas of the state use them differently. And so finding agreement there has been difficult over the last 4 years.
Kind of on that transportation front as well, what about handheld devices? Do you think that an overall ban is something that will be discussed this year?
Again, another issue that has had a lot of conversation. We have taken small steps on texting and driving and so forth. We haven't had a full vote on a ban of handheld devices, and so I can't make a prediction right now on that, but I'm sure it will be a topic of conversation.
Do you think that E-Verify is something that needs to be required by all employers in the state of Iowa, knowing, I mean, we're just on the heels of the trial for Christian Rivera?
Yeah, I do believe that. And in the Senate last year, we did pass the E-Verify bill to require Iowa employers to check whether the people they're hiring are here legally or illegally. That has passed the Senate. It has not passed the House yet, but it's really a federal program that's in place that we want to make sure we use here in Iowa.
Do you think that work requirements for Medicaid is something that will come up again this year?
Well, one of the biggest challenges we have in the state of Iowa, if not the biggest challenge, is the workforce. We have almost 50,000 jobs open with not enough people to fill them. And our unemployment rate is 2.5%, which as a politician, it's great to brag about that. But ask anyone that's trying to hire employees right now, it's very, very difficult. And so there will be a push this session regarding workforce and whether it's some of the expungements on criminal records so that those people can get back into the workforce. In the Senate, we've been focused more on the welfare reform and how we can get people from the welfare system and into the workforce. And so whether that's eliminating some of the fraud in those programs or the work requirements, that's a discussion we've had in the Senate and we want to continue to have.
You've been working on this for quite some time, but you've said you've run into some hurdles in just being able to access information in order to know what can and needs to be done.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest struggles last year in getting that bill passed through the Senate, which we ultimately did, but also getting any traction in the House we didn't receive great information from the Department of Human Services, and we need more cooperation from them to make sure that the division is running efficiently. And without good data, it's really hard to move forward, but we want to continue to work with them to get that good information. And I believe our new director will be transparent and open and help us in that process.
What about water quality? How do you foresee that playing out this session?
Water quality has been a focus the last several years, and we've passed our nutrient reduction plan. We'll continue to work on water quality. It's a little too early to say how it's going to play out, but it has been a priority, will continue to be a priority going forward.
All right, perfect. Anything else that you'd like to add? Any other issues that you want to make sure that make it through session this year?
Well, I just think the other top priority of the Senate Republican Caucus, as long as we're in the majority and as long as I'm leader, is going to be continuing to do tax reforms. We have taken major steps in our tax reforms the last couple of years. We're seeing great benefits. You know, we heard on the Senate floor over and over that we're bankrupting the state and you're going to run deficits. The exact opposite is true. We have more revenue now than we've ever had, and the economy is doing well, and we're in a position to continue those reforms going forward. And so that will always be a top priority of ours.
Welcome back, everyone. We continue to talk things that will go through the legislature this year, but this time it's something that's already passed the House, Senate, and already signed by the governor last session. It's establishing a children's mental health system in the state. But the next step is finding a source of funding that will make this system successful. So joining me now is Peggy Huppert with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI. Peggy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We've continued to check in with you about how the children's mental health system is going. So first of all, tell us, what is the status? What is this children's mental health system going to do?
Well, I'm serving on the Children's Behavioral Health Board. I was appointed by the governor. We've had 3 meetings so far, and we've actually made some very good progress on looking at policy and trying to get the data that we need to make sure that things are moving along. Mm-hmm. It's going to be somewhat of a slow process, but this has been turned over to the regions, the 14 regions, along with a bunch of adult mental health responsibilities. And the problem is that they're relying on the property tax levy, and there's no other independent source of funding to get some of these things started. One example is crisis services. There's no dedicated source of funding for that at all. So that's something that we're going to be addressing with the legislature.
Now, I've spoken to Senator Whitford, the majority leader in the House, mm-hmm. and Representative Pat Grassley, the Speaker of the Majority Leader of the Senate, then Pat Grassley, Speaker of the House, and then I've also spoken to the governor about this. Mm-hmm. All of them have said, yes, it will be a priority. Mm-hmm. But the question is how that actually takes shape. So
right.
What source of funding would you like to see? How much money is really needed to make this successful?
Well, right now, about $130 million is being spent on adult mental health, and that is by the regions, things that are not covered by Medicaid or private insurance. Mm-hmm. So we know that. With children's mental health, things are being done in kind of different pockets and being paid for out of different sources of money, but there's no overall plan or accountability or source of funding to make sure those things happen. Mm-hmm. So that's what we need. And what we're talking about is maintaining the levy, but also adding some state money into it, because that really needs to happen.
That was a concern, though, from Senator Whitford, that mm-hmm. he said, you know, we shouldn't be funding mental health out of property taxes.
Right.
No other state does that.
Well, there are a few, but we are definitely in the minority. That is true. And I've heard Senator Whitford say that. I know that the governor met with the Farm Bureau recently, and they said the same thing. There have been several taxpayer groups that have come out and said the same thing. But the problem, if you eliminate the levy, is that you're totally at the mercy and the whim of the legislature and how they decide to fund things. Property taxes are a steady and reliable source of funding. Plus, they bring local people get involved because they have that local connection. So what we're saying is keep the levy, but if you're concerned about property taxes rising too much or being too much of a burden, then the state can step in and essentially buy down the property tax and make it work and make sure that there's enough money there to pay for the 27 new requirements that have been put on the regions and the counties.
Can they really sustain this?
Well, the regions can't sustain it with the system that is in place right now. They cannot. Polk County is going to be $13 million in the hole mm-hmm. for the next fiscal year. The Eastern Region has just cut $1.5 million. There's three more regions that in the next fiscal year are not going to be able to do it. So it's just a matter of time before all of them are in that situation.
So what does this next legislative session look like? What are you asking for? What do you need?
We're asking the legislature to lift the cap on the property tax levy, first of all, so that regions can levy what they need to levy, and that all the counties within that region levy the same. That's really important. Mm-hmm. Then the state needs to strategically look at, well, what else is needed, and to lower the property tax burden, put state money in and allocate that money.
All right. Well, we will have to see what happens. Peggy Huppert, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the This Week in Iowa podcast. You can find the This Week in Iowa podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so be sure to subscribe now. You can also watch This Week in Iowa every Sunday at 9 a.m. on Local 5. For the latest in Iowa political news, follow This Week in Iowa on Twitter or visit weareiowa.com.